Hey everybody, welcome back. Did you miss me? It's been a moment. It's been a while. I just got back from India about a month ago. Did a 3-week tour through different parts of New Delhi, Mumbai, Agra, McLeod Ganj of Dharamsala. And now I'm back in the States and I'm in the process of getting all of my photography together. Put up on the blog page, so that's going to be coming pretty soon. I think I'm going to wait till after the new year to put that out. And we use this opportunity. This is the first podcast I've done since I've been back, so I got two guests that are friends and travelers themselves. Steve is a studies anthropology at Colorado University in Boulder, and Tim Powell has just recently did a 3-month, 2 or 3 month stint in Europe, backpacking through Europe with, you know, just very little, which is kind of how I did India. I went with just a duffel bag. So we have a lot of stories to talk about in our hour 20 that we did to last night. Just mostly talk about travels, a lot of cool stories, and just kind of have a goof, you know? So this is probably one of the better ways to hear about what I did while I was in India, as I talk about it a good bit. A lot of crazy stuff happened. I was there for the presidential election at the time, but we'll talk about all that during the recording. Other than that, the blog piece and everything else, I'm not going to go into too much detail as I usually do when I do travel stuff, probably just upload the photography, because really, I've got a notebook full of writings that I just wrote while I was there, pretty much my experiences the whole time, so really hoping to get something maybe published in full in the years down the road, so just kind of keeping it basic for now. Other than that, there's other blog pieces up from previous music shows that I've been to in the last couple months. Abraham Partridge and the Tall Boys. My last podcast guest, Aaron Wood. We talked about authors and books, a whole podcast dedicated to literature. He just recently had a short story published in the Charleston City newspaper. And I've got links on my Twitter and social media that follow there. It's a pretty good story, and he's hinted that there's other stuff in the works. So I thought that was pretty cool, and it's worth checking out. And if you want to know what kind of makes him tick as a writer, our podcast would be a pretty good indicator of his inspirations and what have you. So, yeah, that's it. Follow me along. Stay posted. More podcasts for the new year, more photography. It's all coming, it's all happening. And so I hope you enjoy. Try to keep this under 5 minutes for an intro. So that's it. We'll get right into it. This is Coastal Noise Podcast, episode number 61. I hope you dig it.
Okay. Short answer that.
Okay. Well, all right. So anyway.
Tim.
Okay, great. Good to have you, Tim.
I'm Steve.
Yeah, this is Steve. Yeah, I know what you mean, getting out of the comfort zone. Because like what I was talking about earlier when, you know, we were talking about that kind of lifestyle is it's a lot harder to feel like, whether you're a religious person or you're just somebody who feels like they thrive or they draw from something that's around us in the universe. It's harder to feel that connection to it, I feel like, if you're in this regular kind of day-to-day grind. You've got this routine. And because of that routine, like if you got a full-time job or you're doing school full-time, it gets dedicated, you know, your resources and time and money get so heavily dedicated to that. That is harder for you to find variations in that routine, and that can be kind of like draining on your creative aspect and stuff like that. So it's good to have long trips like that, I feel like, you know. And right now, our society, our workforce, has more of a style that's geared toward work instead of, you know, what Europeans, you know, might have of the time they get off. So it's harder to get, you know, we have these more trips where we go off to a place for like a week or two at the most, and that's then we go back, you know, to the routine. So I would like to find a way to get out and do that
long term, you know, for however long. And I feel like the U.S. is the western part of the U.S. is where I really want to push out and go further to. You've spent time in California, right, Steve?
Oh, barely. I mean, not what I would consider time. I've spent I've spent a couple of weekends there, but not. I mean,
more like pass-throughs.
No, I mean, I went to a thing and got to where I was going from the airport at like 1 a.m. on like Friday late night, and then had a thing all day Saturday, and then got up and left on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
So like, I mean, if you add up all the drive time and all the travel time, I mean, like, not much. I mean, I don't really know California.
Mm. And that's what I'm saying. I don't really know California either, but every person that I've met has said that, based on my personality, that California would be a fitting place.
I mean, California is like the promised land for the U.S. I mean, they've been singing songs about going to California since the 1800s, isn't it?
Yeah.
Going to California. I mean, you know, minor 49ers and all that. There's a reason that football team's called that. I mean, the manifest destiny, all that. I mean, that's the kind of, that's a very old idea. So.
Yeah.
Where else can you go when there's an Austrian actor that becomes the mayor?
Right. It's just a very different place.
I think all bets are off on that kind of metric these days.
That's true.
Yeah.
I think
the mold's been broken.
Yeah. Or exploded somewhere.
That was weird, a weird thing. I witnessed that happening while I was in India.
Oh, really?
Yeah. You know, flew over and landed in Mumbai and... from there went directly, never left the airport, just went straight to New Delhi as like the first major stop. And they were having like the worst pollution that they'd had in like a decade. I remember reading in their newspapers like every day, just reading about the progress of it and all this kind of stuff. And it was like 60 times higher than what the UN considers critical for a pollution rating or something like that. And I mean, they shut down schools, they shut down a coal plant or two. I mean, it was just intense. You couldn't see out more than like 3 or 4 miles ahead of you just because of the dense smog that there was. So it was brutal. Like, you couldn't see the sun. It was crazy. So I'm contending with this. And I'm kind of sick. Like, I'm sick there for the first week and a half. So we get
because
there.
Of the contamination there.
No, I had something, came with it the whole way. Never really slept at all on the airplanes either, and just it was, everything was just whack. So I got there and that was going on, and then I think within, it was maybe the third day that I was there, was when the election went down. Woke up to finding out in the news, before I even turned on like any kind of U.S. media, that the Indian Prime Minister had decided overnight, without any formal warning, that they were no longer going to accept their 500 and 1,000 rupee currency notes, which is like a major form of currency for them. Because like a meal over there could be like around 500 rupees or something if you were to go to a sit-down, like, you know, kind of basic mid-level. So that's, you know, a 500 and 1,000 rupee currency note is pretty relevant, pretty important. And they were just like, we're not accepting that anymore. Everybody who has those notes, you have to bring them to us and exchange them for new notes, which we're not going to have for a while. And we're closing the banks today. And the ATMs are not going to accept like anything or give you money or nothing like that.
Yikes.
So that was craziness. And then, so that was going on. And they were doing this to kind of counterbalance against the black money, is what they called it. Counterfeits and street money. And this idea that a lot of Indians were keeping their money under their mattress. So they wanted to recirculate it back in the banking system. So they did all this. And it wasn't a quick fix either. And they wanted to tax the people on the money. They taxed them on the money they brought back. You know. As a way to make up for it not being in circulation, I guess.
Yeah.
So, but it was no quick fix. Like, 2 weeks later, I was still reading about people dying in line to get money. Wow. Like, we would drive around town, and there would be just lines around the block to get into a money exchange, a bank, all this kind of stuff.
Jeez.
Yeah, so money instantly became like a commodity for us, you know. Mm-hmm. And then...
Well, that was nationwide.
Hmm?
That was nationwide, or is that just Mumbai?
Oh, no, it was nationwide, yeah. And, you know, a lot of tourists and everything. I mean, it was a major hit, you know, the pollution and the money. And then I turn on the news and Trump's winning, and I was like, huh, I guess shit isn't just crazy just over here. So, and then just continued watching the news from the room that I was staying at, you know, at the YWCA, and I'm just watching going...
Yeah, room at the YWCA?
Yeah, it's like the YMCA.
Yeah, no, I know. Yeah. That's funny. I didn't know that.
Why is it
funny? I didn't know that, like, you could still stay at the YMCA. Like,
oh, yeah.
I mean, regardless of whether or not it's in India.
Over there, it's like a hostel. Okay. It's like room service, cafeteria stuff, yeah. And everything else. So, and it's like, you know, an actually safe place that you can go and that kind of thing. It's an established place, so...
Cool.
Yeah. And it was in the heart of New Delhi, right down there... what's it called? It's where they have all the different headquarters for all the nations of the world. Like, it's the street. It's their government street. It's their political street. And they have all these different...
So they have all the embassies.
Yeah, embassies, exactly. With the U.S., the biggest one, like, they have a whole lot. They're like... Mm. All the other places are like... turning off power during the day to save, you know, and the U.S. Embassy just runs their shit all day.
Sure they do. Of course.
Really wild. Like, we were in the airport in, I think, Mumbai on the way over maybe to Delhi, and, like, the lights just went out in the airport, and I was like, whoa. And my friend Jimmy, who I was with, he was like, oh, yeah, they do that, and, like, nobody else had a reaction. I was like, wow, that's interesting. So, yeah. Saw it was just surreal. It was really weird and surreal just to see that, watch that from India happen.
Watch the election happen?
Yeah, because I didn't really think Trump... Like, I thought he was going to win for a long time, and then I thought the debates ruined him.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I thought, ooh, that's not going to go well for him.
Well, the New York Times thought that he wasn't going to win, so...
Oh, well, I mean, people were putting odds out of, like, 90 to 1 and all this kind of stuff. But it all goes back to what the media, who's in the media and who... the ties, the political ties and all that kind of stuff. They could have thrown out any numbers. They could have been like, there's no way Trump's going to win, just to get people thinking.
Right.
Like, who was the guy who published, or the... He had the thing a day before in the newspaper.
Michael Moore.
Huh? No, it was a president. And it was like, he's won. Was it Truman?
Oh, yeah. You're talking about, yeah, it was Truman. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. You know, so I bet that psychologically the media...
They said that Truman was going to lose.
Yeah.
And then Truman won. And so that finished around Truman holding the newspaper.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's it. I'm sure psychologically that still has a place in today's campaigning. Sure. You know, just to get people to think... that one person's going to win over another. But there I was, sitting there watching it, and it was all coming together. And I'm scrolling through social media feeds, reading other people's reactions, like all my American family and friends. I'm just going, this is weird. And, you know, just couldn't believe it. And then about to leave to go have some lunch, you know, just to get out. And just as I'm about to leave... which is where my Wi-Fi is, you know, I look and it's like, Trump has won. It's like, I'm just on Google, like, election, with the election typed in with the results, and it was just like, Trump has won, a big green arrow or something like that, or a check mark, rather. Mm-hmm. And I showed my friend Jimmy, and we just fucking laughed, and then we went down and ate, you know. It's just like, wow. crazy. So then after that, it became everybody... who I told I was an American, they were like, ah, yeah, Trump, yeah. And it was like, like, haha, yeah, you know, what can you do? I'm hopeful, we're optimistic, we'll see what happens, you know. I had like a preset routine of conversation that by the end of the trip that was just like, I had a set number of laughs and phrases and gestures, like, haha, you know, wish for the best. You know, who knows what could happen. But, yeah, so, but yeah, New Delhi was pretty hectic. It was crazy. It was, really populated. That's their business center, you know. It's where people come to friggin' work, you know. Mm-hmm. So it's very kind of impersonal in a lot of ways. Because kind of just money and the hustle is overtaken a lot of it. But just cars, traffic over there. Like, I don't know if y'all ever been to an Asian country where, like, so... I know this is in other places, like in different Asian regions and stuff like that, but India, the traffic, it's like if you just took a handful of marbles and just rolled them across the floor, like that's what it's like a four-way, four lane is treated like a seven lane. Like, people will get over into they'll get over to the sidewalk just because it's room, because it's somewhere they can drive a car, you know, and not hit somebody. People walk into the streets, you know, kids are riding their bikes. There's a camel.
There's like animals and all that too headed that way, right?
Yeah, people are trying to sell you things in the window. You know, they walk out on the street. Just craziness. People honk more than they use their blinker. It's just total madness. But despite all, I never saw anybody get in a wreck, and I barely saw any road rage. But I did get rear-ended. That was the only thing. Like, didn't see any road rage and didn't see anybody else get in a wreck, but a car I was in got hit from behind. And I was like, what are the odds? And the guy just got out. He just got out and he walked and he looked at his car and he looked at the guy and he said something. And then he got back in the car and we drove away. And I was like...
So, that's interesting.
But after New Delhi, we went to Dharamsala.
Dharamsala?
Dharamsala, yeah. Up in the mountains in McLeod Ganj. And that was pretty cool. That's where the Dalai Lama lives. And it's just, you know, 4,100 feet up in the mountains there. Village of 10,000 people. Tons of foreigners all over, from all over the world there, because the Dalai Lama's there. You know, they're looking for enlightenment, or they just want to be there, you know. You got people in dreadlocks. You got hippies. You got, you know, the whole lot, basically. And... it was just a cool place. Like, you'd see the same person like three times throughout the day, like in a cafe or coffee shop, and then out in the streets. And you just go up to him and start talking to him, like, "Hey, man, I saw you at the cafe earlier. It's like, what are you doing here?" And they'd be like, "Oh, I'm from New Zealand. I came for the cricket game. Because they're huge." India is all about their cricket.
Really?
Mm-hmm. That is their national sport. I still don't even think if you showed me cricket, like, I would know you what they were playing. Like,
I asked a British guy what's happening one time.
Yeah,
I was at a little pub eating a sandwich and having a beer, and the cricket was on. I was like, "Hey, man, sorry, I'm an idiot American. Can you explain me what's happening?" He didn't even have any idea what's going on.
Yeah, so New Zealand guy was like, "Yeah, we played India like 6 weeks back, and I came over to see it. Been here ever since."
Well,
he's like, "I'm an English teacher," or something like that. He said, he's like,
"That sounds like a New Zealander."
He's like,
like a traveler.
He's like, "I got here and I just decided I'd just do all my teachings on Skype." So, it's like, but it kind of sucks because I don't have really good internet. So, yeah. Yeah. I met this guy just like in a random kind of like hostel, like outside. Drinking tea, looking over a mountain. He was just one of the people that were there. There was an Israeli guy who, like, could barely speak anything, but was, like, always laughing. It was great. So, Dharamsala was really cool. A lot of meditation retreats, a lot of yoga centers. I went and saw the Dalai Lama's temple.
Can you go inside?
Mm-hmm. Yep. It's pretty cool. And it's really, I mean, the Indian government has just allowed the Tibetan people to set up their own government in this little... town,
government in exile.
Yep, government in exile. And there's a Tibetan exile museum outside of the Dalai Lama's temple, which was really intense. I've got some pictures of it, and I wrote a good bit about it, but it's just really, they have all these stories and all these pictures, and like, it's dead quiet. Like, you're walking through and it's dead quiet. There's this eerie silence, and there's just like this kind of a drone of a sound that you hear, and it's just this TV that's playing these images of different things without sound, and then it's just Tibetan people like standing there staring at you, like not pictures but actual people, and it just rotates through different faces of Tibetan people, and then it shows you more images of like exile and like all this kind of stuff. So it was really intense. And there's this mural, there's like stone statue of just like people like in anger at the top, and then it's just like a mold of people underneath them, of people like laying in ruin, and you know, kids and dogs and all this kind of stuff, and it's just really intense. But yeah, that was, I would say that was definitely the coolest place we stayed. It was just really nice. The supermoon was out that night. It's just a cool place. I would have loved to explore deeper into the Himalayan mountains. And I met this girl from the Netherlands, Marijke, who wanted to ride a motorcycle through it. And she was looking for somebody, you know, and I was like thinking about it, but I've never ridden a motorcycle, and you know, I've never really I've driven them, but I wouldn't have been just hop on and like ride it myself. And I didn't know her ability, and I was like, have you done this before? She's like, yeah, I've done it like 3 other times. She's like, the second time I fell off and my bone went through my arm, it was gnarly. No. I was like, okay. Well, we're talking about going through the Himalayan mountains where there's snow.
That's how you fall off the side of the Himalayan mountains.
Yeah. Yeah, and they drive fucking crazy. Did I mention that? And then, you know, that factor. And then also, I'm traveling, you know, like you did. I have a duffel bag. I have a gym bag that I came to India with, you know. And I'm not prepared for riding on a motorcycle in the snow.
Yeah.
You know, so, which I would have loved to have done that, but it was just not an ideal situation for me at that given time. But besides that, went to Agra, which is like 4 hours south of Delhi, something like that. I saw the Taj Mahal, so that was pretty cool. You know, cool to see the...
Did you go into the jungle at all?
The jungle, no.
No.
No. I imagine that would be more further south. And we were like mid-northern and west coast. So Mumbai. I went back to Mumbai for a couple days before my plane left. And Mumbai was actually kind of cool. It's like the little brother of New Delhi. But it's got a lot of British architecture still going on. And so a lot of pretty buildings, a lot of nice structures, but still a lot of people, still a lot of hustle and bustle, a lot going on. It just didn't feel as hectic. Pollution wasn't near as bad. Not many crop burnings as there had been around New Delhi that contributed to that pollution. They also had just had like their New Year's equivalent, so a lot of smoke from that. It was just terrible as far as the smog was concerned. But Mumbai was cool, though. I liked Mumbai. It's kind of like the Miami, from what I've heard. Like, Mumbai is like Miami, and New Delhi's like L.A., you know? So, it was nice there. I liked it. Still pretty brutally hot, but, yeah. I could dig it. Now, whether I would go back, I don't know. It's hard to say. There's a lot of other places that I definitely want to, you know, get to, like you and I talked about before. And I think the U.S. is a big place I want to explore, especially out west. So, but I also have a lot of other international spots I want to hit. You know, I want to go to Hawaii. I want to go to Amsterdam, the Netherlands in general.
Amsterdam.
Did you?
I did. That was, yeah. It's a pretty rad place.
How many days did you spend there?
Just the night.
Just a night.
I took ball weed, but I couldn't figure out how to roll it.
You couldn't figure out how to roll it?
I couldn't do it. I was watching YouTube videos. I could not, because, you know, I don't smoke. I was like, you know, I was in Amsterdam, so I was walking down the red light district like, oh, this is crazy, right? Like, those and the little things, and they're like knocking on the window, saying, hey, come here. I'm just like, no, I can't, because if I do, I'll make a bad decision. So... only 50 euros. 50 euros. No.
That's incredible prices, but no.
Yeah, sorry. No, I can't. So I went to a coffee shop, and I was like, hey, can I get a beer? And they're like, this is a coffee shop. We don't sell beer here, but you get weed right there.
Yeah.
It's like, okay. So I went to the window, and I was like, hey, can I get some weed? He's like, God, do you want, idiot? He didn't say idiot, but he just said
voice. I heard they're, like, really mean about it. Like, you walk in, you gotta tell them, like, right away what you want, and they're like, okay, get out.
They weren't, like, really excited to have me there. I didn't feel very welcomed. But he did, and he's, what kind of you want? He's like, I don't know weed, so I was like, purple haze. Like, I know that one, you know. Purple haze in my brain. So I got some purple haze, and took it back to my hostel later, and I tried to roll it, and I couldn't do it. And the next morning, I got up, and I tried to roll it. And I had these British guys in the room with me. They were laughing at me the whole time. I was watching videos like, how do you roll? Because I got rolling paper and all, didn't know, but I couldn't do it. So I may or may not have smuggled it back to Germany and borrowed my friend's friend's pipe, and him, me and my friend smoked out of the pipe in Germany. So I bought it legally, smoked it illegally.
May or may not have.
May or may not have.
May or may not have.
Did you may or may not have to take a plane, or you went by like a train or something like
train,
that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, if you had gone by plane, I would have been like, you're a badass. You are cray cray.
Yeah. Though that actually getting back is a whole story itself.
Yeah.
You know, you're in the middle of a story, so I don't want to take away from that.
I don't remember my story. You said Amsterdam, and I instantly piped up. Because, like, anywhere I haven't been, I'm, like, more curious about that than anything I could say myself. So, but now that I have my friend Marijke, like, I can actually go. And she's, like, a 30-minute train ride from Amsterdam.
There you go.
In general, like, you know, I say Amsterdam because I don't know anywhere else in the Netherlands. You know, I know Amsterdam. And I would totally like to see Amsterdam. And
Appledorn is really pretty.
What is?
Appledorn.
Appledorn.
They have a zoo that's dedicated to monkeys. Just Word. All sorts of, and they just run free like all over the place.
Oh, wow.
It's the craziest thing ever. That's and no cages. Cool. They just, I don't know how they do it. But it was pretty awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. There was a zoo in Mumbai, and it's like one of the biggest in the world. I want to say it was like 40 square miles long or something like that. Long, you know, 40 square miles. But yeah, from what I was reading, like, they have caves, and they had like safari rides, just like all kinds of far out stuff. Couldn't make it because I met some California folks. They were with the international program of the University of California, but they were all from different parts of California. Like, one girl was from San Diego, another one was closer up to Santa Cruz, and just all these different places. And went out with them, and we got pretty drunk.
Yeah.
Yeah, went out and partied out in Mumbai. Met these guys from, like, Africa, like South Africa, and just had a good time. So couldn't really make the zoo the next day, and I had to leave later that afternoon. Oh. So yeah, I would have liked to have gotten to see that, but you know, when you go out to places, like, you can't really have the mindset that you're going to do it all and you're going to see it all, and yeah, it's going to be on the schedule and all this kind of stuff.
You do what you got, you do what you do.
Exactly. I'm reading this book by Ralph Potts called Vagabonding. And he talks about that a lot. You know, it's like having the mentality. And I've been on, you know, so many vacations with, like, family or friends where it's like, if it doesn't go to the person who's, like, feels like they're leading the charge, if it, you know, it's not all going, and they just get frustrated, and it's, you know, and they makes it unfun for other people. And, you know, that's one of the beauties of traveling alone, right? Is like that you can go in your own time at your own agenda, and you know, not be pressed. Plans can change at a moment's notice. You know.
Did you read Jack Kerouac?
Did he do Dharma Bums?
Yeah.
He read Dharma Bums.
Dharma.
Yeah, I read Dharma Bums years ago in college.
Yeah. I read Dharma Bums.
Get into more of his stuff. What's his, like,
On the Road? Is
on,
like,
the Road.
His
big
his
one.
Thing.
His known one. Yeah. Yeah. Did you read it?
Yeah, really, yeah.
What'd you think of it?
I read it while I was in Spain.
Yeah. What'd you think?
I found all of my solace in it.
Yeah?
Yeah, I found myself in it. Mm-hmm. It was kind of like, it was that gift to come down and say, like, oh, there you go. Like this is what you're looking for. And that was it.
That's cool.
I'm not sure, it gave me, a lot of times I like to say that the fun thing about traveling is you kind of, like, get to be inside of something while you imagine it or something like that.
So it kind of like, it gave me more of like a way to think about myself and all of that, and all of like living abroad. I was living abroad at the time for like a year. And
is it Merida?
No, I was in Spain. This is in Spain. This is in Granada.
Okay.
But yeah, I had a lot of angst. So I really kind of fallen in love with Mexico. And I'd spent probably total like 5 or 6 months in Mexico and then moved to Spain. And I had a lot of friction from that. It was two really different places. And I wanted them to be... I wanted it to be more like Mexico, so it probably took me 2 or 3 months to get used to it. And I read that book as I was kind of getting used to it. It helped me find a lot of identity. But yeah, he's a cool character. He kind of like spends a lot of time like traveling somewhere, and he'll like, all he wants to do is get to Denver. So he's like from New York, and like he gets to Denver, and all he wants to do is get to Denver, and he doesn't really like it. And he likes it and has a good time for like a day and a half, and then he's like, he gets like anxiety and he gets pissed and like something bad happens and he kind of hates it for like 2 or 3 days and he gets stuck there for an extra 2 days. All he wants to do is go to California. And then all he wants to do is go to California. He gets to California. It's really cool for like 2 days and it sucks. I was like, that's it. That was kind of, it's like, yeah. It was cool. He's an interesting guy. He drank himself to death at like 44. But,
sounds yeah. like Hunter S. Thompson in a little ways.
Kinda, in some ways. Ernest Thompson's kind of a result. I mean, Jack Kerouac was kind of a hippie before there were hippies. They were the Beats. But they took that from the Beatitudes. I mean, Jack Kerouac identified himself as a Catholic mystic. Took a little bit, was a Catholic, but took a bit from Buddhism. But they say his Bible was, or his journal was just this rich text, and he had like drawings of Christian symbols and just like and prayers.
Christian
and
mystics were real things.
Okay, well,
how much Buddhism played a part into it, or Hinduism? What would you say?
I said Buddhism.
Buddhism. I don't know how much Buddhism played a part into it, but like, in the Middle Ages, there were a lot of Christians.
Oh, I'm sure he wasn't talking about the Middle Ages.
But it used the same concept.
Of what?
Can I get you another beer?
And yeah, if you want, I was going to grab one. But
nope.
Of the same concept of what?
Of like kind of being mystical, but like still maintaining. It's like, I don't know if I can explain it very well, honestly.
Okay. Well, anyway, but all I was trying to say was like he would go out and party, and he would go and get wasted for like 3 or 4 days. But like his journal would be like full of prayers and stuff, and like scripture and stuff like that.
Yeah, so it's funny how that goes, isn't it?
Just like chasing women, it, like chase. There's yeah. I related to it a bit when I was doing all that.
Yep.
What about you, dude? Stefan talked a lot about India. What was your trip? I don't think Stefan knows about like your. I mean, I know about your trip, but I don't think Stefan knows about it.
Oh, me?
Yeah.
Okay. Where do I begin?
I don't know.
I love telling the Dublin story with the hooligans.
Stefan, you're the host here. I mean, what kind of
travel questions do you have for Tim? Start from the beginning, man. When did shit start getting weird?
That's a good thing.
That's a good question, Stefan.
Good question. Thank you. Been doing this a long time.
I mean, shit was weird from the get go because you know, again, I was just completely different, and like everybody spoke my language, but nothing was the same. Like, everything was. I mean, they drove on the wrong side of the road for starters.
Wow.
And they had different ways of speaking, and people walk up to you and be like, "Hey, what's your story? What does that mean? What's your story?" I had to the cab driver when I first got there. I filled me in on like the basic cultural elements that I should be, you know, aware of. Tell me to get started.
What were those?
Like, what's your story? Is like, hey, mate, what's your story? It's like, hey, man, what's going on? It's, what are you about? What are you here for? And told me that if I'm ever sitting alone at a bar, and there are a couple guys having a couple pints, they will probably pull me into their conversation because Irish people are just super friendly and they don't like to see people sit by themselves. And that turned out to be true in my experience. But just like stuff, little things like that to kind of help me know what's going on. But I don't know. Weird stuff. Funnest part was thinking, I think you had told me you had an experience similar to, being prepared mentally to sleep outside because, like, there's this one point, I don't know what your story was. I remember you telling me about your preparedness, but,
go ahead, I can quit, I know what you're talking
about. Okay. There were a few times when I first got to France and when I got to Munich, for one reason or another, I was ready. I was like, I'm gonna have to sleep outside because I couldn't get to my hostel somewhere or another. And it was just like, in Germany, it was like 1 o'clock in the morning and it was lightly raining. Like, and when I say rain, it's more like a mist coming down, but it was rain. It was very light. And I had my backpack and my guitar, and I'm like, obviously, I'm probably gonna be sleeping outside tonight because the hostel is closed. You know, lights are off, like nobody's there. But yeah, as far as weirdness, I might be able to think of something in a minute. So, yeah, tell
you. Yeah, my cousin was a big Jack Kerouac fan, and so we would like talk about it a lot. And we were there at the same time, so we would take trips big trips like once a month. And I went off on a big. I went off on a big trip once I finished my work there. And, but yeah, I did that. I kind of would like, and you start to notice things. You're like, ooh, there's this like fountain. I was in this little town and there was a fountain with like a trough and the water looks pretty clean. I was like, well, I could take a shower there.
Yeah. How can I survive?
And I lived in an apartment building with like 5 floors and no elevator. So you open the door and there were like no... So this is like Spain and Latin America. So you open the front door of the building and there's no rooms or anything on the first floor. So you go up to the second floor and the second floor is the first floor. So you have this like, but in like cheap little apartment buildings, it's just like a landing with a bunch of mailboxes and stairs. And so my front door was always open. And I said something to my cousin about it. He's like, yeah, you could just like, you know, if you're just traveling, you just come in here and just sleep on the floor for a night and just... figure it out. And so I kind of like started watching like the fronts of apartment buildings after that. I mean, that went away for a little bit. You got to be ready, but you got to be detached.
Yeah.
You have to be dedicated to a certain kind of thing and you have to be in a certain kind of place to do that. There are certain places where I would do that and certain places where I wouldn't. I mean, he got robbed doing that. He was there for the running of the bulls in northern Spain and he like checked in his backpack at the town hall because apparently you could do that.
Wow.
And like slept in the landing opening of an apartment building or something. Or, like slept in the street for like a week or something. Mm-hmm. You know, I took a nap on the the garden in front of the royal palace and like slept on top of my backpack or something. And, like. Put my wallet in my back pocket and like concealed on my like I was waiting to get into my hostel and they only opened at like 4 o'clock and I had like been up all night and so I like went to Burger King for the first time I'd ever been to while I was traveling and got a couple hamburgers and found a place that sold and like bought a bag of cherries and like
what you gotta do
went and took a nap in front of the National Palace because like that's what you do. It made sense at the time.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know what made me think of this, but I feel like I've got three really good stories that always come to mind, but I'm not gonna go into all
the hooligans one is always a good story. There's ones that you like never tell me though. You never told me that you may or may not have like taken weed from Amsterdam back to Germany. Like,
you know, there's so many small ones that are like a lot of fun, but like here's one that blew my mind. So me and my friend who was living in Germany at the time. This was after the weed incident, I think, that may or may not have happened. It was before. He and I met up in Rome. We spent about a week in Rome. And one of our days, we went to tour the Roman Colosseum. And we're sitting there, and first off, the guy who was giving us this tour tells us all that the Jews built the Colosseum. So my first thought was, this guy clearly has no idea what he's talking about, because there's no way the Jews built the Colosseum. Anyway, but we're sitting there, we're listening to the guy talk, and my buddy, his name is Zach, he goes, "Tim, is that really tall guy over there?" And I look over, and there's just like this blondish guy standing up. He's really tall, he's wearing sunglasses and like a blue plaid shirt. And he's like, I said, "Yeah, what about him?" He goes, "Dude, I think that's Conan O'Brien." I'm like, "No, it's not, dude. Come on. Like, seriously. It's definitely not." He says, "No, I really think it is, Zach. It is not Conan O'Brien. Go ask him. Go ask him." And he says, no, I don't want to do it. So I said, "Okay, fine. Just to prove you wrong, I'll go ask him, because it's not him." I walk up to this guy. Now, mind you, he's like 3 feet taller than me. And I walk over. After the guy starts talking, people walk away. I'm like, "Hey, excuse me, sir. Sorry to bother you, but my buddy's crazy. Are you Conan O'Brien?" Without skipping a beat, he goes, "Yes, I am. How you doing?" Shakes my hand. It's Conan O'Brien. There's not a doubt about it. So for the next 3 hours, we end up being in his tour group. So it's him and his wife and his two kids touring the Colosseum, the Palatine Hill, and the Roman Forum together.
Wow.
That was pretty nuts. And I asked some journalism questions for my boy Corey, because Corey wants to be a journalist, wanted to be a journalist, sports journalist. So I was like, can I ask you a question about journalism and doing what you do for my friend? He gives me a couple tips. Yeah.
He was pretty cool, wasn't he?
Mm-hmm. Nice that he never denied who he was. You know, some actors or celebrities like try to hide themselves or whatever. Conan was cool, you know, hanging out. "Hey, Conan, hey, how you doing? Good to see you," you know. Nicest guy. And then later on, I saw a tweet on Twitter, just random, about some girl saying, "Conan O'Brien sitting on the seat behind me headed to Rome," or something. I said, "I just met him."
Nice.
What was your favorite place you went to? You can't say Dublin, or you can't say Ireland.
It's hard to say just one place.
Like, top three.
I would have to say I've got a tie between two countries and two cities. My two favorite countries I went to, probably, honestly, Ireland. And
so you can't say Ireland. You got to pick the other ones.
Well,
I knew you were gonna say that.
You want me to be honest or tell you a lie, Steve?
No, we're gonna grandfather Ireland in.
Yeah, Steve, tell us.
We're gonna grandfather Ireland in, and then the other three after.
Oh, after.
Or
Ireland.
Your two countries and two cities. Whatever.
Okay, after Ireland. Because the Ireland isn't first, it's just one of them. Okay, I guess I would say Germany and Germany and Belgium. Just the people were amazingly nice. The beer and food was great. And my favorite two cities was Nice, France, and Bath, England. Forget about Paris. Paris sucks. Don't go there. It's not as romantic. And the girls make it out to be, "Oh, Paris and the cafes and the guys singing," and it's not that at all.
Are the cafes not cool?
Not really.
Are there not, like, not that many cafes?
There's cafes everywhere. Like, France, Paris is no different. But I will say, the wine is cheaper than the water, so always drink the wine.
Yeah. I was at my grandmother's today. And she just has this love affair with France. And so I was, like, looking at it. And she has, like, pictures, you know, and all this stuff. Things that grandmothers have. And there were, like, just tons and tons of little, like, patio cafes. And it's just, ooh, like, yeah. Like. And so that's why I asked.
But then you remember that the people there, not everybody, not because there are a lot of individuals there that are really nice. But generally speaking, the stereotype is true. Parisians are jerks. I tried to order a sandwich one time, and the guy just wouldn't sell it to me. Just like...
He wouldn't sell you?
He wouldn't sell me. I want the sandwich Americano. I try to speak French, you know. Bonjour. Habere. However you say, I don't remember. I was like, on this little chalkboard, it says sandwich Americano. €7. I said, "That, please." And that por favor, whatever. And he just like, he said some stuff, and I was like, "I don't know what you're saying." He said, no, whatever. So then this other girl, this New Zealand girl, came walking up. It's like, "Hey, you know, I speak French. You having trouble?" It's like, "Yeah, he won't sell me a sandwich." And she says, "Let me try talking to him. So she goes over. She speaks fluent French to him. Comes back and says, "Forget about that guy. He's just being a jerk."
So, did he sell it to her?
No.
He's being a jerk.
So any cafe or restaurant I went into, it was like they weren't happy to see you. They were not happy to serve you. They were just like, oh, it's another American. Outside of Paris, people are decently nice. Except the train lady, the train person in Calais, she was not fun.
What about her? What happened to her?
It's a story I'm trying to finish and put on my blog, the yourattendadventures.blogspot.com. I haven't posted it yet, but so it's when I first get into France from England. I took the ferry over, and because for whatever reason, I was delayed getting off the boat, and I get in, and I'm trying to get a train to Paris to stay with my friend Noe, and the woman's just like, yeah, there's no train. Wait, hang on, Tom. Like, what? I'm trying to get. I need to get a ride to Paris. She's like, yeah, no, you can't. Sorry. Like, no explanation, just like no. And like, when her nose wasn't like, no, sorry, it was like, we can't. It was like, no, no, no. Very no sympathy whatsoever.
Sorry. Brick wall, dude. Figure it out.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. So I was scrambling around. I had no idea what I was doing. It was like 4:30 in the afternoon. And it sucked, and she was not helpful at all. And then she's like, my ship's about to leave, and she just got up and left.
Just took off, yeah.
Well, the train station was still open. I looked at the park bench and said, I might be sleeping here tonight because I don't know what I'm gonna do. But she's gone. She was just gone. It's like, so that's. I go into more detail in the blog story.
But. That reminds me of a situation I had in India where I was trying to order some food, like. First, I called the guy over, and his English was, like, just kind of so-so, and he was an older guy, and I was, like, pointing at this, and I was, like, what is this? And he kind of told me in, like, a little broken English, and I was, like, all right, and I was, like, and what is this? And he told me, and I was, like, all right, I want this, and it was one of the things he told me about, and then this. And he kind of just inhaled, and he, like, rocked up on the balls of his toes and came down and said, no. And I said, no. And he said, no. And I just stood there, like, waiting for further explanation. And it never came. So I said, okay, can I have this? And he said, and he nodded yes. I was like, okay, great. And then he left and he brought me food, and it was awesome.
That's good.
Yep.
But the lady at the Calais never came back. I had to get a random teenager that was hanging out with his friend to very slowly, with a lot of broken English, try to explain what was going on and help me buy a ticket to Paris.
You want to hear another really outrageous thing that happened while I was there?
Yes.
This is just like blows my mind. So this girl Marika that I met. We had been palling all around for all maybe like 2 hours, and we stopped to go eat somewhere. We were having a beer on this sky patio looking over the mountains, and we're talking, just talking life, and she's telling me about her brother, who has this girlfriend who he met while he was like over in San Francisco or something like that. I can't remember all the details, but he met this girl somewhere along the line and came back home and was like in love with this girl, and was like, this is, you know, so she's thinking that she's Marika, she's that, you know, her brother's about to get married and all this kind of stuff. So he's showing her all these kind of pictures, and I don't think she really ever saw any pictures of Marika, but anyway, she came from India. She took this bus, like this 14-hour bus ride from wherever she was into McLeod Ganj. And she's walking around and she sees this girl that looks really familiar to her. And she goes over and she goes, are you? She's like, oh my God, you are my brother's girlfriend. And she was just like randomly touring India. And she was from like South America or something like that. They had no plans of, like, she didn't even know Marika. And they're just both in the same little village in India, in like northern India, at the same exact time. And she just pointed, found, saw this girl and recognized her from pictures that her brother had shown. Is that crazy?
Yeah.
Not as crazy as you were hoping, right? But
yeah,
I don't know. I just thought it really weird, like two people from complete different parts of the world converging on one little town.
Yeah.
In a different, totally different place.
Yeah, it is weird.
Yep. Things happen.
Yeah, they do happen.
I've seen how long we can hold that.
You broke it.
Mm-hmm. I couldn't help it. I felt you smiling. I felt you smiling in the distance.
I couldn't stop smiling.
Yeah. I was just staring at this beer opener and...
beer openers will make you laugh.
It tickled me after a while.
Yeah, they tickle.
It got me.
So where do you want to go to next?
Nowhere in particular. No, oh, are you talking about travels-wise? Yeah, I thought you meant conversation-wise.
no, so, I...
Should I leave that unedited? Should I leave that long, pregnant pause?
Totally.
All right. That's the longest we've ever done, ladies and gentlemen. I hope you enjoyed that. I hope you reflected on everything that was said. I hope you didn't turn it off, think that was the end. I hope nothing... You didn't lose interest. So next, what I'd like to do, and I've got a lot of different plans. I mean, I'm going to be pretty stationary, I think, for the next couple months, but, my next big plan, what's most, tantalizing to me is, I've got some different methods of revenue that I could potentially set up to kind of go off and, just do light managing, remotely. And I'm thinking about like buying a, Ford Transit made in the last 5 years, low mileage, converting it to a camper, and just going out west and traveling around for however long I feel like, basically. I want to hit Flagstaff, Arizona. I want to go to all up along California. I know people in Oregon. I know people in Washington. I want to go to Seattle, Boise, Idaho, Wyoming. There's more parts of Colorado that I haven't explored yet. I want to see all that stuff, and I would love to do it from a minimalist approach, you know. Mm-hmm. And I know now at my age and my mentality and resources and everything, like I'm managing it all. You
so
know?
When you say minimalism, what do you mean?
Well, I'd be, you know, I mean, I'm going to be traveling in a van, so what I can carry around with me is going to be confined to what I can have in that van. I won't need much for the van. I mean, the van's just going to be a mode of transportation, and if I so choose to sleep in it, you know, and I would just be going to place to place. I mean, you know, besides gas, food, you know, things like that, entertainment, those are going to be my experiences as opposed to possessions. So, yeah, that kind of lifestyle, you know.
Yeah.
Camping out, it's basically going to be camping on wheels, you know. And I bring my guitar, try to play, try to network, you know, maybe establish a route. Doing writing, podcasting, you know, just all that good stuff. Make a little side money here, but like I said, I'm going to have modes of income established, you know, if I plan everything and execute appropriately, which I'm confident I can do, and then just go out there and live it up for however long so I choose, you know.
Sounds awesome, man.
What are your what do you call them, modes of income that you can manage remotely?
Well, I don't want to say that broadcasting it or nothing, but I mean, I've got enough to where I've done the calculations and the amount of income that I can bring in monthly, just, you know, doing minimal work remotely would be enough to sustain me comfortably on the road. You know, pay what bills that I need to pay, which in the next couple months I'm going to be knocking down a lot of debt, pretty much all my debt, except for like one thing, but you know, one major purchase, you know, one home. So, but besides that, I mean,
Yeah, I'm not looking for numbers or anything. I mean, you don't have to tell me your whole financial stuff. I mean, that's personal. I was just curious about methods.
Yeah. Renting is a viable method if you've got a bunch of rooms that you can rent out to folks.
Manage that remotely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, especially if you have family and friends in the area and you're renting to the right people. If you get a military family, you know, things that have higher chains of commands that you can speak to if problems arise, or, you know, people that have money given to them to live in certain places for, you know, a year, you know, do that. You know, if you're ideally located between two military bases and things like that, you know, you can do that, or, you know, renting's pretty big. I mean, I've actually thought of, as part of a way to facilitate this trip, and just, you know, my life, part of my life as a means of revenue income, saving up, getting some land, getting some more property, and going from there. Two or three houses you could rent out, you know, comfortably, maybe do that remotely if you plan and organize and execute. You know, read some literature, get some books, read about it, do some searching online. It can be done. So, you know, I'm looking at different methods like that, and then just other ways, you know. And then you can, there's a lot of resources to work remotely in different areas using the internet, you know. And I've got resources on that of different things I can do. And I'm just reading, you know, books. I'm buying up books that are specific to the kinds of things that I'm trying to do, the lifestyle that I would live if I were to go mobile for a long duration of time. And there's definitely possible ways, you know, with the internet. And then you got Craigslist. I mean, if you wanted to just find some work work for the week or whatever in a place you're passing through, somebody always needs a farm hand or, you know, a lot of stuff I've never done before necessarily. I mean, you know, I've done manual labor, so you could apply that to farms, I guess. I don't think I've ever been a farm hand. But, you know, different things. Just throw myself into different circumstances for work, you know, doing everything very with a great deal of awareness and paying attention, you know, not doing sketchy things, or just take up a job. Can you wait tables, you know, or can you wash dishes, you know, whatever. I mean, there's money to be had everywhere, and there's resources, ample resources available to us. And I feel like nowadays, in our day and age, there's so many opportunities to facilitate such a lifestyle, you know. If you can be comfortable with camping, people don't like the term or the word living attached to any kind of mobile thing, you know, living in a van, living in a car, any of that kind of stuff, because they associate it with it, like homelessness. Mm-hmm. Whereas like homelessness I see as being a thing of being being without a home, without you choosing to be, you know. So, you know, being forced into that situation. Mm-hmm. What you're looking for?
No.
There Steve. It is. So yeah, I think it can. I know it can be done. It's just a matter of can the individual do it, and can they do it quickly, and all that kind of stuff. And the more I think about it, the more I get excited about it, because it feels. I think of the blocks, what would hold me up, and I get excited again because I think of ways around it. You know, I get inspired by all the different facets, the variables of what could go wrong, and what I would be uncomfortable with, and what would be my limits, and how I would handle certain situations. And I'm not fearful of it. I'm not apprehensive of it. I'm just excited about it. So that's I'm not saying I'm going to do it, but it is where my mind's at. It is where I'm, like, all my goals are, like, leading up to and focused towards. Yeah, just onward and forward. And, 'cause a big thing for me is, like, I want, if I were to go out somewhere west, I want to find, like, where, like, the best place for me. And I know there's, you know, there's probably no one specific place, 'cause I've been to lots of places that are like really cool and you could see yourself living in. But I just want more exposure, and like, you know, a lot of Americans are in the mode of working for months to get a week off to go somewhere to have a very minimalistic experience, you know, just a week. They're not living there, they're just passing through, is almost in my sense of time, and then come back to work more. And it's like, well, would you like to spend another week in that same place that you liked and see if you still like it, or if like you'd live there, or do you want to go, like, what about all the other, you know, two dozen places that you are thinking about in the country, like I am? So, and then also, you know, it's the idea of, I feel like if I moved somewhere, I would just be continuing in the grind of the workforce and that kind of thing, which is kind of draining creatively. And if I do things in this kind of what I'm calling like a semi-retired state, which I've been telling myself for the last couple of years, I set goals like Napoleon Hill's Think and Grow Rich. You ever read that? It's like one of the biggest, most popular self-help motivational books. Of, I mean, it was written like the early 1900s, and it's still today, you know, like up there with Dale Carnegie's How to Win Friends and Influence People. And it talks a lot about visualizing things. You know, how much money do you want to really make? Well, tell yourself that. Tell yourself every day. Envision the money. Imagine you're holding it. Smell it. Swim in it. What do you want, you know? What kind of house do you want? Envision it. The lifestyle, all this kind of stuff. And a lot of books that I've read that are like self-help, motivational books, which is just a genre that I really enjoy from time to time for like the psychological reasons and like financial reasons and all the things. That's a big theme, you know, that carries on. And so I started telling myself, I'm going to try to retire, be retired like from like normal work, what I consider normal work, by the time I'm 35. And I've just been saying that for years. And like, here I am, like, envisioning myself a year from now being in a semi-retired state. Like, you know what I mean? Like, managing remotely some revenues and income and going out, using resources to generate a little bit more income and living a lifestyle that I'm happier in with less money, because I don't need more money, because my value is in time and experiences as opposed to money. So, cheers. That's what I'm going for, you know what I'm saying?
Yes, sir.
Clink with me. Clink with me, Steve. So that's my rant. So,
word.
Talking about wanting to, you know, stick around somewhere if you think you like it. Steve can...
I don't know. The keeps coming in and leaving. So.
Yeah. Get out of here. Jeez.
Oh, send him away.
Let me tell Eddie to enjoy himself a little bit more. We'll continue on. Continue on.
Alright. Yeah, so what Stephen talks about, like, you know, if you come across a place and you kind of like it and you want to stay a little bit longer, and you know, Steve and his travels can attest to, you know, when you're traveling, that is honestly the ultimate freedom. Would you agree?
Yeah, there's probably like one place I've ever been to when I was like, yo, I want to stay there.
Right. So you just book another night in the hostel.
No, I mean like stay here to live here.
Oh, right.
That's what everybody always has in there. It was like, oh, I went here and I decided I want to stay and I've been here for 2 years or something like that. Like everybody always like in the kind of like Western like backpacking people, somebody always like knows somebody. It's like, oh, I came here like 6 months ago, and like I stayed here for a year, and then like I left for, you know, they came back. No, but that's only happened to me like once. I never booked an extra night either.
No, never. How long did you normally stay somewhere?
Between 2 and 3 nights, depending on the place. Some places I stayed extra. If I was staying with a friend, I might stay a little longer, a little shorter. Depending on what I was going there for, kind of how interested I was, and things like that.
I just remember when I first started, I would book like a single night at a place, and that gave me zero time to really take in, you know, the city and everything.
Yeah, I never did like a single night. I only ever did a single night when I was like flying out. I did that once when I was going to Guatemala City. I went through there like at the end of a big trip, and
I thought it was really cool and really wanted to stay and didn't get to stay, but eventually got to go back.
Yeah.
And had my like 3 or 4 nights. I was like, okay, cool, like, let's go somewhere else.
Well, my point being is that you didn't necessarily always have a set obligation to leave. When you came upon a city, you're like, hey, this is really cool. I'm going to book a few extra nights and stay here, you know, another night or two or whatever, and you stay as long as you want. And then whenever you feel like leaving, you just leave. Mm-hmm. And that's what I'm getting to, is that's the ultimate freedom of this. I arrived at this city today. Check in. I'm going to have to spend the night. I enjoy today. I'm going to book another night. And hey, I'm really enjoying this. I'm going to book, you know, a couple extra nights.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have too much anxiety for that.
No, I don't.
I love that. I mean, that's it. That's what it's all about.
I didn't know where I'm going.
I don't. I end up in Cinque Terre, Italy.
But Cinque Terre is one of those places.
I had never heard of it.
I know, but
where we're going. These two girls were like, hey, we're going to Cinque Terre. We should go. It's supposed to be really pretty. All right, let's go. So we went to Cinque Terre.
But Cinque Terre is one of those marvelous places that you can go and just spend days and days and days and days and days.
But I didn't know that.
I know you didn't know that, but whether or not you know that has no impact on like how awesome the place is. Like,
yeah, I know. I'm not arguing with that.
Yeah, that's all I'm saying. Like Lisbon, Portugal was the one place I went to. I was like, ooh, like this place. Like I had a ball in Lisbon. Lisbon was so cool. That was the one place that I could have like. I stayed there. I booked like a week. I was like, we're just gonna go. Like I was meeting a couple of friends from Brazil, and we were going to Lisbon. Then we were gonna go to Madrid, and did like 2 nights. And I was like, and I don't know what I was doing. And I just like it was because of like my timelines, and I just had like all this stuff that was like. I had a couple of things that were already bought, like a couple of things that were already concrete, and one of the Lisbon things was that. Like, I found like a really, really cheap plane ticket. I found like a plane ticket from northern Spain for like 20 euros to Lisbon, and then one for like 30 euros from Lisbon to Madrid. So I just did it.
Mm-hmm.
But I could have stayed there longer. That's the one place that I've been to where I was like, I could live here.
Mm-hmm.
And my Portuguese was not very good. By the end of that week, my Brazilian Portuguese was really good because I hung out with a couple of Brazilian guys like all week. But
I couldn't live in Cinque Terre though.
Yeah, Cinque Terre is kind of a fairy tale kind of place, isn't it?
It's beautiful, but you could I wouldn't want to stay there more than like 2 weeks.
Actually, Munich was the one other place that Munich was the other place that I'd been to. I thought it was really cool, but Munich was really interesting.
Munich was my layover in India, and I was thinking to myself, if the rest of the place...
Wow, you went to India via Munich?
Yeah, like, I went laid over in Munich. And wow. I was like, if Munich is as nice as this airport, I was like, hell yeah.
It's pretty.
Gotta be
Munich was cool. I mean, my hotel was in, like, a Middle Eastern neighborhood,
mm-hmm.
and then it was just really diverse. Really diverse, really cool, like, multicultural, multi-ethnic place. And it's so, like, Bavarian nationalist. Like, you don't see German flags, you see Bavarian flags.
Right.
And it's very, like, we eat beer and pretzels. And, like, it's very, like, you know, people always have those stereotypes about Germany. And, like, Bavaria has its own universe of stereotypes. And, like, but it was cool. I'm trying to remember what all, like, there wasn't just that we were in a Middle Eastern neighborhood, but there were other pockets of like multi-ethnicity that I thought were really cool and really kind of surprised me. Like there were a lot of Turkish people, and I had no idea that there was like a lot of like Turkish German people, and I thought that was really cool. And Munich was a really cool place, and the food was awesome. Somebody turned to me after like a week on the trip, and I had just like a face full of like bratwurst and potatoes and beer, and they were like, you really like, or Steve, whatever your name is, Jethro, you really like German food, don't you? I was like, yeah, I did. It was cool. I guess Mexico City kind of had that effect too. I kind of had like an afternoon there, and an overnight and an afternoon, and thought it was. I mean, Mexico City is just such a beast. There's so much. I mean, there's just so much to that place. It's cool. You can, like, you look at a map, or, like, you hear people talk about it, and you hear, like, all the Aztec names of the cities and everything. Azcapotzalco, and, like, this is like that. Teotihuacan. It's like, damn. It's
cool place.
What was your craziest experience?
My craziest experience?
Yeah.
Like, what kind of crazy? Like, afraid or like...
First thing that comes to mind.
First thing that comes to mind was getting chased by street dogs this summer.
That sounds awesome.
We were at a... I was doing an interview. I told this story. Never mind. I was doing an interview in this abandoned train yard. And they have, like, this, you know, like, the city, comma, state, at the, when you stand on the platform. There you go.
Would you like to join us? Would you like to join us, Eddie? Come on.
That beer.
Come
he's,
on.
He's got you other kind of stories.
You burned my fucking cover, dude.
Oh.
It's okay.
Well, sorry.
Look, podcast, outcast.
Oh. It's okay.
He fears his own voice.
But some of these guys had this art studio, this like graphic art studio in one of the old offices at the train station. And they kind of turned the train station into like an outdoor installation space. So it was really cool space, like just whole place. And and I was in the middle of an interview and all of a sudden like it felt like there was a train going by. And then I realized that like there had not been trains in this place since probably like 1973. And so then I realized that it was an earthquake. So we went outside because it was an earthquake and it's not good to be indoors. And we watched the power lines shake for a little bit and kind of marveled at the strangeness of it all. And then I went to go pee. Everybody else went back inside. And I turned around and there were like these three dogs and they were just like sprinting at me. And I was standing up on top of this concrete train platform that was probably like 2.5-3 feet off the ground. And on the ground was just like 6 feet of grass that I knew was just full of snakes and tarantulas and all the things. And I already kind of gotten bitten by a snake once, like a month before, and I really did not, and I was okay. Like, it didn't, like, pierce the skin, and I had my shoes on and everything, so I didn't want that, I didn't want to double down on the snake biting me in the foot, and there were about there were like three crazy dogs about to, like, bite me everywhere. So I was like, well, I can jump down into the snake grass, I can turn and run that way into what's probably like more grass, like, or I can do something else. And I thought back to the story that my cousin had told me, and another version of that same story that I heard from somewhere else. And so I looked, so I like turned to the dogs, and I like attack stance, and like threw my arms up in the air like I was a big like grizzly bear, and just screamed at them, and they stopped, and they turned around and like trotted away, and a couple of people ran screaming out of the office where we had been doing the interview and were very concerned for me. I was like, what do you like? I handled it.
I've never heard that story. That's great.
So that's kind of, it wasn't that big a deal, but
that's good.
It's kind of a fun one to tell. The craziest one though, the Morocco experience was just, we took a boat from southern Spain to one of the two Spanish states that's in North Africa. And you take a bus to the border, and then you walk across the border, and then you catch a cab to wherever you're going. So we walked across the border into Morocco. And so we haggle with the cab driver. And my cousin wants to speak Spanish because he thinks that, like, they're going to give us a better price if we're Spanish and not American, which I thought was bullshit. Regardless, we all continued to haggle with the guy in Spanish. We've all been fluent in Spanish, and none of us were Spaniards or, I mean, we're all just, you know, Southerners and nothing more.
Hola, I need a taco.
I mean, not we spoke better Spanish than that. Should get the idea.
That's how I envision it. It's more fun.
But so we cut a deal with this guy. We're like, look, you're going to pay, like, he's like, this is the price. And we're like, all right, fine, let's just do it. I was like, look, dude. Otherwise, we got to go to this town and take a bus, and all the buses are already gone. Like, do you really want to figure all that shit out? We were going to a mountain town. It's like 2.5 hours away. So, and we had missed the last bus to go to the mountain town. So we're just standing there at the borders, you know, people running around and carrying, you know, carrier bags full of blankets and stuff. And so we get in the cab with this cab guy. And he goes down the road for like 10 minutes, and he's playing Moroccan music. And I'd never really been in a place where I really... That felt like non-Western, and that also spoke a language that I just completely did not understand.
Arab Berber, some of these people.
Yeah, well, this guy spoke Arabic. He didn't speak Berber. Yeah.
Yeah, out in the mountains they spoke Berber, but they would always kind of say like, oh yeah, like my grandparents used to speak Berber, but they didn't. Berber's an indigenous language of northern Morocco. But anyway, but so the guy like, so he starts driving, and we're like, cool, we're in Morocco, like yeah, cool, we did it, like we're here, yeah, it's like coastline, it's gorgeous. And all of a sudden he pulls this like super hard right into this town, and just like slams on the brakes. He's like, I have to take you into this place. And we're like, no. Like, no. Like, we're going to stay. Like, what are you talking about? He's like, no, for real, though. He's like, I have to have your passports, and I have to, like, mark your passports on this, like, document. So imagine if you were going to go somewhere and, like, get your visa stamped, or get your passport stamped, or something like that. Like anytime you go through passport control, they're going to take your passport number down. Or, like, anytime you walk into a hostel, almost always, you know, in a foreign country, they're going to take your passport down. They're going to make a copy. And so it's me and my cousin and my cousin's wife. And the guy's like, points to my cousin. He's like, you're coming with me. And he's like, I'm not going anywhere. And the guy's like, no, like, for real? And we're going back and forth. And we're like, man. And he's like, look, my wife is coming with me. And the guy's like, no, I just need you. Only you are allowed to come. And so after like 5 minutes, he's finally like, okay, fine, you can bring your wife with you. And so they both leave, and they go, Steve, you watch the stuff. So like all of our bags, all of our everythings are in the trunk of this car. And so I get out, and I just stand there on the sidewalk like this. Like I'm like, you know, like it's like the Paleolithic and I've got a couple of clubs and I'm like it's them or me, man. And my cousin and his wife come out, like no joke, like 35 minutes later, and I'm standing in the middle of the street in the same exact pose. It's like I was like parked very normally, like on the curb, and I had somehow managed, I was on a big street, I mean it's like the width of a house or something, and I had managed to wiggle my way like from all this anxiety out into the middle of the street. I was like, it's like nobody's taking my backpack, and I had like a pair of pants and a shirt. That was the, and we all got back in the car. Everything was cool, and then we had been driving through the countryside for about an hour and a half, and he just over on the side of the road, just stopped the car and got up. And we're like, oh my god, what's about to happen? And he just like walks over on the other side of the car where nobody can see, and just whips it out and just pees. Gets back and we're like, oh my god, what's gonna happen? And I was like, is he peeing? He gets back in the car and like laughs, like, yeah, I had to go. We're like, you had to go, huh? Like, ha, like, yeah, that's cool, yeah. Okay. So that was the craziest. That, and when we got on the boat to go there, my stomach was kind of weird. Like, yo, I'm gonna go get a Sprite. Like, you know, it's kind of a bumpy ride. Like, you know, waves kind of pick it up. So I walk over to the bar. Like, yeah, one Sprite, please. And the woman is like, what in the hell are you doing? Like, get back to your seat. And I turn around, and there's, like, TV monitors. And the boat was like a cruise ship or, like, an airplane or something. So these TV monitors that are flashing, like, red and green. And it says, like, go back to your seat right now. Go back to your seat right now. And so I go back and sit down. And there's waves that are, like, throwing water up on, like, top of the boat. And the boat's going, like, rocking back and forth like a teeter-totter. So yeah, so I just got sick as a dog. What's up?
We crashed the helicopter.
Just tell them, say it out loud, what's going on.
North or south?
Is it cool if Gug and Tom come inside?
Like online with Molly, here. Pretty much.
Yeah,
so on the what?
Online with like Molly. Like
they come, oh wow.
Molly,
so
like, go let them in. It's double locked. So you know, motherfuckers.
Two is one and one is none.
Not
so. Hey, what's up?
How you doing?
Hey, what's up? I'm Corey. Hey.
Nice to meet you, Eddie. What's up, dude? How you doing? What's up, Stephen?
Good to see you, man.
The other guy is sitting here. His name's Steve. Just so you know.
What?
Steve.
Very strong Steve.
What's up?
Nice to meet you.
Tom.
Steve.
Tom, what's going on? I'm Stephen.
Nice.
What?
All right. Tom. I think we're about done with this podcast.
Yeah, folks, we're done. We got a lot of people here, so we're gonna bug off. A lot of musicians. We need to go make some music is what we need to do. You feeling that, Eddie? You feeling that?
I mean, no. I was feeling earlier, but you know.
Yeah, well, you're shut that fucking being loud as shit. If it had been an intro song, that'd be one thing, but you can't play fucking elevator music the whole podcast. Anyway, folks, that's all for us tonight. It's been a pleasure. Catch you next time. Bye.